Hi everyone, welcome to this week's W3C CCG. And before we begin, hope you guys had a great IIW. And today our main agenda is to talk about DWN, decentralized web nodes. It's actually a quite highly anticipated session. And today we're very glad to have Amdor, culture of the DIF Secure Data Storage Working Group, to actually talk about that, as well as Kim and their colleagues to talk about DWN. But before then, just wanted to quickly go through some administrative stuff. So first of all, just a quick reminder on the code of ethics and making sure that we ensure a respectful and constructive conversation. I think we've been doing that for years, but just want to start the meeting with that. A quick intellectual property note, anyone can participate in these calls. However, all substantive contributions to the CCG work guidance must be member of the CCG with full IPR agreement signed. So if you have problems or questions in regards to the W3C account or the license agreement, please just let any of the co-chairs know. Now, these meetings are being automatically recorded and transcribed, and we will try to publish them, both the transcription, the audio recording, and the video recording in the next 1 or 2 days. We use GC Chat to queue the speakers during the call, so you can type in Q plus to add yourself to the queue, or Q minus to remove. And you can do Q question mark to see who is in the queue. All right, a quick moment for introductions and reintroductions. So if you're new to the community or you haven't been active in the community and want to re-engage, feel free to just unmute and introduce yourself. All right, what about announcements and reminders? Any announcements or reminders in regards to the upcoming event? Kalia, please.
We had a great IIW last week, and it was fun to see people from all over the community. Our next IIW inspired event is the Digital Identity Unconference Europe in Zurich, June 18 to 20th. We are quite likely to sell out. So if you are based in Europe and thinking about coming, please register sooner rather than later so we don't have to, so you can come. And we're also working on DID Unconference Africa in September, and I will, and registration will open, I don't know, sometime soon, but that's what's coming up next.
Cool. Thank you. Thanks, Kalia. Any other announcements or reminders? Anyone wants to share their most memorable IIW talk or maybe ideas or discussions and sessions that you would like the CCG to host in the coming weeks? Don't be shy. Joe, please.
Thanks, Harrison. Yeah, I just want to share, there's a really lovely demo of using BBS Plus with zk-SNARKs for range proofs using the VCDM, so the verifiable credentials data model. And the what was very interesting, the reason I wanted to highlight it today, is the issuer doesn't need to know about these range proofs. If they have issued their VC with BBS Plus, then this range proof can be added on as a negotiation between the holder and the issuer. So you can late bind these complicated predicates, and the initial issuing authority doesn't need to be involved or even know about these predicates, which is really interesting in terms of late binding in the ecosystem. So that was fun.
Great. Thank you. Thanks for sharing, Joe. Anyone else want to share what they learned from IIW? And Joe, I probably would want to connect with you offline later in regards to seeing whether we can host a session on this PBS Plus and Venture Boost.
Yeah, be happy to help make that happen.
Thank you. Thanks a lot. All right. Any questions on the work items or updates? Last calls on the introductions, reintroductions, reminders, announcements, or work items? All right. Benjamin, please.
Yeah, I just wanted to let everyone know I'll be sending out an email about this pretty soon. The ECDSA test suite for the verifiable credentials spec related to data integrity. The test suite is ready for implementations, and I'll be announcing that later today. And then next week we'll be doing our test suite office hours. If anyone is working on implementations of anything VC 2.0 or any of the data integrity proof stuff or anything related to the whole suite of specs we have going both at the working group and the community group, I'd love to have you join us. That's next Wednesday at 10 a.m.
Great. Thank you, Benjamin. And Susan, you're in the queue.
Thank you. One of the things that I really appreciated about IIW was the conversations in the healthcare space. So often we're talking about jobs and education, which are super, super, super important and lay down a lot of the foundation to allow us to move into places such as healthcare. But starting to reimagine healthcare where we can get some of the folks that are in the middle, you know, out of the patient and provider physician relationship is really exciting, and to be able to kind of envision how to use the entire suite of products to address needs in healthcare was really exciting. There was a couple events and sessions in that space, and so I just wanted to share that view coming from healthcare lens, not just the jobs and education, and they all fit very well together.
Great, thank you. And Susan, I might want to connect with you in regards to like who we can invite to talk about kind of the SSI in the healthcare industry later on.
Happy to do it.
Thank you. All right. Any other last calls or any comments? All right. Let's get to, let me check the queue first. All right, let's get to the main agenda. So again, this is a very highly anticipated talk in regards to decentralized web nodes, and very, very honored and glad that Andor, the co-chair of DIF, Secure Data Storage Working Group, as well as Kim and their colleagues, can actually join us today to talk about decentralized web node. DWN is actually a data storage and message relay mechanism. It's important and critical part of the kind of the Web3 and decentralized identity stack. So very interested to learn more about it. And, without further ado, just, I'll pass the mic to them, and then they will talk more about it. Andre, please.
Thank you, Harrison. Really appreciate it. I'm going to share my screen here. Can everybody see my screen? Let me see if I pull up here.
Yes.
Awesome. So quickly, we have three people representing this today. Myself, I'm chair of the TSC at DIF and co-chair of the Data Band Working Group. Actually, it was handed off to me from Kalia, who's here. And also thank you, Kalia, for the wonderful IIW, which I was fortunate enough to attend. We have Kim, who's the executive director at DIF. And as well as Dan Buckner, who's been an editor of the spec since the very beginning and head of decentralized identity at Block. So we'll be each taking separate sections. And if you have any questions during this presentation, feel free to ask. If they're shorter questions, we're happy to answer them like on the fly. But if you have a longer question that is a discussion, we'll leave that toward the end. So the agenda today is, first, I'll give an overview of DWNs, kind of where they're at today, give some ideas around kind of giving updates on the state of DWNs. Dan will come in and share a demo. And then finally, Kim will end up with how DWNs are fitting with this larger initiatives that we are working on and very excited to sort of fit DWNs as a part of it. So, and then we'll finally end with Q&A after. Any questions or thoughts before we move on? Can't see the chat.
No, everything looks good.
Awesome. So, goals of my section is to just give you a better understanding of DWNs, know where it's being used today and understand how it's been moved over time. So real quick, what does a DWN solve? As Harrison mentioned, it's a data storage and message relay mechanism that people use to locate public or private permission data, relative to a DID. I like to think about it as it's in an attempt to make building DApps, decentralized apps, more accessible and easier than historically they have been. And I think the key feature here, that the key sort of insight is by just writing a simple JSON document, a developer can establish a basis for a safe and robust interaction between and across apps. It doesn't require a blockchain and has a very loose interpretation of identity. So we're not dealing just with, for example, credentials. We're also just, you know, dealing with posts and images and all those things that you might create for social interactions or any other type of interactions. DWNs are intended to be sort of a more general mechanism to handle this. So kind of logically, if you think about it, the way that I like to think about DWNs and the way that it's intended to sort of act is basically separating out, when you're building an app, the UI and logic layer is separated out from this data and storage layer. And so the DWNs is this thin layer that sits above storage that provides you the permission layers, the semantics and so forth to allow you to interact with the storage layer. But at the same time, it's standardized so that the UI and logic layer can operate, and you can have multiple apps that do, interact with the same lower layers. So kind of as a problem statement for developers, it's reduction of a lot of development time that you normally spend building data access controls. So you can focus on more of your use cases and actual app. For users, the idea is that you have control over your data. You're not beholden to a single data provider. And for an ecosystem, we're hoping that by using DWNs, we're going to establish more interoperability between apps. And that will hopefully create some value chains that do not exist today. So that's kind of the goal, I think, from the perspective of three different layers here and areas. So first thing first, how do you pronounce it? We've heard it. We've heard a lot of people ask it in different ways. So you have DONs. You also have D-Web nodes. You have DWNs. Choose your version. There's no official way of pronouncing it, but it has come up a lot, the pronunciation. So the history of DWNs, it was incubated at DIF under the Secure Storage Working Group. And again, just for some clarity here, and also I came in about a year and a half ago after Kulia had invited me to take over as co-chair. But obviously Dan had been there since the beginning. I think Kulia, you've been there since a very long time as well. But it's been a work in progress since November 2016. Originally, it was called Identity Hub, and it's been, we meet bi-weekly on Wednesdays at 9 a.m. PST. And if anybody would like to contribute to the working group, we'd love your participation. And, we work on the specs usually during that time. So what makes DWN special? First of all, it's P2P. So, you don't need necessarily a server, and it's transport agnostic. It has a protocol definition and layer which allows you to easily configure, discover, and build DApps on the fly. It has fine-grained access controls to allow you to handle complex interactions with permissions on your DApps with a simple configuration file. It's DID-based, and so we use service endpoints for discovery. And they're inspired by a number of technologies. We reference them all the time: ActivityPub, UCAN, Solid, Nostr, EDPs, all things that have inspired some of the decisions that we have made and learned from. Any questions before I move on? Okay. So one thing we've seen as we've kind of dealt with DWNs, it's a long haul, but we've noticed that a lot of people are struggling to understand kind of what does DWNs mean related to other technologies. So one of the efforts that we've put together is a companion guide. It evaluates various other types of personal data stores. For example, solid, ceramic, atomic data stores, Pure Ghost, encrypted data vaults, MyDex, the hub of all things. We take a look at it. I'll actually pull it up here. You can see here that we've made an attempt to try to help people understand what exists in the ecosystem today to give them some guidance. But if you have a personal data store that you'd like to add onto this list or like to clarify anything, this is our stabs that we took to sort of help clarify some of the offerings in the market. Pure Ghost had actually their offer come in and add in their entries, and we've had a few other ones since the initial creation, which has been very exciting. But if you have any ones that you'd like to add in, feel free to do so. And the links of this, I can send in the chat. I'll just put it here. And then at IAW, we had a great IAW session on a personal data store face-off. We had three representations aside from DWNs, UBOS, DataSpaces, and Solid. And we talked about sort of why we're doing the approaches we're doing and trying to sort of align and understand, are we even trying to accomplish the same goals? And so, you know, we've been trying to evaluate how DWNs are relative to other technologies and trying to listen to the advice we're getting from other people around how they're approaching the same problems or different problems and why they're approaching different problems. So a DWN in actual practice runs kind of similar to how you think about PWAs. It's a very thin layer that sits under the apps that allow you to semantically organize basically data in a way that you can re-reference it later and use it across different apps. So for example, if you have a profile, as an example, today if you're on like, for example, Instagram or Twitter or whatever, and you have your profile, and they kick you out, you lose all your data, right? You lose your identity across that app. And the idea here is that even if since you own the app or the data, that all these apps will connect to it, but you won't lose that data across it. So this data becomes portable across your apps, and the apps become much more simple in terms of they're mostly handling the logic of rendering and sharing how that data is represented to you, not in terms of actually storing and keeping that data. And because DWNs have a semantic layer, you can actually represent them over schemas and so forth. They can run anywhere in the browser, in a native app, server, and Docker. It's kind
of... Wait, Andor, I think your screen is still showing the DIF web page.
Sorry about that.
Thanks.
Thanks for telling me. So once we pull back here, all right, so DWNs run like a PWA. So you can see right here, this is the slide where it shows basically it's running as a thin layer underneath the apps. And basically all apps can connect to that data layer over DWN. And you will have basically, for example, a profile. This profile is able to be used across apps. So there's no single app that contains your profile. It's reusable across apps. And it's semantically driven, so you're able to actually, you know, represent your reuse that data and kind of partition it in the same DWN and have users basically build on top of it. Any questions so far?
How much time do we have left?
Say it again?
How much time do we have left?
About 35 minutes.
Oh, wait, we have the whole hour?
Yes.
Oh, wow, okay.
All right, so
we don't have to do the whole hour. We can do the Q&As at the end. Yeah.
DWNs can run in the browser, in the native app, in the server, in Docker. And we've had a number of apps that have been built with DWNs and the hackathon. We've had like at least probably more than 10. I've just listed a few of them: a decentralized LinkedIn, anonymous door unlocking, revocation system, HealthX protocol. Everybody's trying different things with DWNs, and there are a number of tutorials from the main implementers that are TBD, a chat app, a search view app, and a book review app that you can check online. They're really helpful just to know how to interact with DWNs. Deployment-wise, there's a few different types of ways you can deploy it. The simple deployment is because it's peer-to-peer, you don't need an extra server sitting on the cloud. You could do this locally just between DWNs. But for most cases, we expect that you're going to want a remote DWN for high availability. So in this case, scenario two, Bob has a local and a remote DWN. Alice has a local and a remote DWN. And they're kind of communicating across their DWNs over the remotes just to keep the high availability to make it so that way, you know, if you're on a plane flight or if you're out of network, if you're on camping, you can still connect with Bob's DWN or Alice's DWN.
So this is what that kind of looks like. Bob would share his did with Alice. Alice then would resolve Bob's did. Alice then sends a message to Bob's remote node. Bob would then relay that message to his local node. And then now Bob has that message on his phone, where then he could relay his responses back to Alice's node and down to Alice's node, local node. Any questions on this slide before we move on? You can just check the chat real quick.
No, we're good.
Awesome. So all of basically messages that communicate over DWN are JSON-based messages. They include execution parameters, authorization materials, signatures, signing, encryption information, and they rely on IPLD, SIDS, and DAG APIs. So we have basically two main really important interfaces. So if you go to the actual spec, and actually I'll pull that up real quick. I'm going to pull up the spec real quick. Okay. If you look at the spec, you'll see on the left-hand side, we have a number of interfaces defined. You have records, protocols, and permissions. The main, I think, like really important ones are records and protocols. Those are two critical interfaces. Of course, permissions matter in sync, but the ones that are really unique, I think, are records and protocols. Permissions is actually getting an upgrade pretty soon, so we've been talking about ways that we can handle permissions a little bit better. But I'll go quickly to describe a little bit about how records and protocols work. And then permissions is moving to a first-class protocol. That's something we've been discussing. And then sync is the concept around keeping nodes eventually consistent with each other. So let's go to records, and I'm running through this relatively quickly because we do have a lot of content here. But if anybody wants me to stop and pause on a particular slide, feel free to let me know. Records are just where you store, they're the messages that store your data basically, and you can filter them on various parameters. You can filter them on schemas, you can filter them on context IDs, you can filter them by your parent IDs or by the protocol themselves. On the records query, you can do temporal sorting, so you can query by date ascending or date decreasing. So that gives people the ability to sort of define, you know, how they want to order their records when they query them off of the DWN. And these records are encrypted in a fine level, so that way you only have access to the records that you've been authorized to have access to. You're not going to have any access that you shouldn't have.
Yeah, I would you know, insert that the records are not well, everything in the DWN is effectively a record, right? It's some are stored, some are not, but there is no HTTP API. It is effectively almost like RPC. That was done because it was trying to maintain, you know, agnosticism in terms of the transport. So when he showed that like object that said query, you can query by all these things on the right, by tags that you apply to the records. And you would send this content object signed with your bid, you know, maybe permissions if necessary or not, if it's something public, to filter and select for what you want. And this is going to be interpreted by the DWeb node to say, okay, well, I'm going to run this query now that filters on these certain attributes that, you know, he was describing. Everything really is an object, though. Whether it has a binary attachment or not, or JSON attachment or not, everything is an object. And when you get to the records portion here in a second, keep in mind that, like, because everything is an object, even mutations of files, so like if I logically create a record that stands for, say, an image, I would then update it by pushing new record objects that tie to its ID and mutate it. And it's eventually consistent. So it understands, even though there might be multiple changes coming into different instances of your DWN that live in different places, it's always going to achieve the same eventual consistent state of that logical record, given the mutations that occur on it. Does that make sense? Okay.
Cool.
So he'll go through this, I think, in a second.
By the way, there's a question in the chat. Are the records all in JSON, or could the tabular data also be stored in the record?
So the records are like a more of a logical concept in the sense that there's this control object that is JSON. It's always JSON. And that is small, really small. It's just like this little descriptor thing you see here, plus, you know, JWS for signatures. You know, if you need to prove who it came from, like you did. That's really all, right? That is always JSON. Whether it has a data payload, the data payload could be anything, and we've tested it with up to 100 gigabyte binaries, so it could be as large as you want it to be. So it has large file capability. But all these little items in here are little items that some of these are a little bit outdated, like the encryption thing isn't listed there anymore, but like most of them are same. And that's a control value. And then it also has an authorization object that is the JWS I was talking about. Beyond that, your records are whatever the current state is of data you push in accordance with the latest record entry. Does that make sense?
All right. We'll keep on. Thanks, Dan. The other main piece of DWNs that I think are really important here are protocols. The protocols are basically, if you were to define how users should interact with the data layer via object, verb, action, scope, how would you do it? And it's basically a JSON document, and it's defined in the spec here. I'll just pull up here. An example of a protocol would be like this, which basically says, on a post, anyone can read the post. On a reply, anybody can write a reply. And so it's establishing basically authorizations around who can do what over a JSON document. And you can see here on the bottom right, this would be an example of post anybody can read or write, and reply the recipient, and the author of the post can write the reply to it. So there are certain established like words that you can use, but it's essentially its own little, you know, definition language that can describe the pretty advanced interactions with your data layer. And so all you do is when you want to establish an app or a protocol, you just basically configure the protocol on a DWN, and now various apps can also connect over that same protocol and do whatever data interactions they require.
And something I'll note is, so these protocols are queryable if you make them there's this publish true property you can put in your protocol definition. If you do that, then people can actually query your DWN to see what you have installed. To see all the, you know, if you have chat protocol installed, if you have like a, you know, social media, if you have LinkedIn style protocol, whatever, and then they'll know whether they can interact with you. The protocols have like a dialect. So like, Andrew, if you show them the example again, that sort of simple example, you'll see that there's these, actions, right? Those actions have other capabilities. Like you can set certain objects to be roles. Were you going to cover this, by the way, Andrew, the role thing?
I'll
cover it. So you can make like an object a role. You could have like a under structure, you could declare that there's this object a record type called member, right? And you could say $role true, just kind of like actions. These are all reserved sort of, triggers. And so role would mean that any DID that you make the recipient of that member record, for instance, becomes a member, and then you can refer to it in your actions. You can say role member can do this. And they have to show up when they go and do their queries or whatever their mutations are in reference to that. They have to sign it with their DID so that you understand that it's coming from someone who occupies that role. Really what protocols are is kind of a first open source decentralized implementation of GBAC, like graph-based authentication, which actually is tied to DID. So it's sort of like this hybrid object capabilities ACL thing. And like RBAC, it offers some role-based capabilities and some defined actors like anyone, author, and recipient, but all based on DIDs. And the really cool part is you can compose pretty much any app's authorization structure that we've come across anyway. You can do Slack authorization structures with admins on channels. You can do kind of anything you want by coding in this dialect. There's a couple other trigger types. Like there's action, there's size. You can set size minimum maximum on certain things. So if you said post and you said $size, you could say minimum this many bytes, maximum this many bytes, or whatever combination you want. And that would actually tell the DWN to enforce maximum sizes on records so that you don't end up with posts that are a gigabyte. Maybe you want them all under a megabyte. You can actually do that. And then all of your nodes will listen to it.
they will effectively look at this rule sheet and they will become eventually strongly consistent against the rules. So what we've done effectively is we've taken out most of the centralizing business logic from apps. And we've said, you know, because really what centralizes an app is not just like, hey, can I address it by DID? Right? Like I could sub out DNS domains for DIDs today and it wouldn't make Facebook decentralized, right? What makes Facebook decentralized is all the logic that comprises the output of a thread on Facebook. If I can't replicate that looking at the same set of data and I can't have that on my devices, it's not decentralized. The logic, the actual guts of the app is in Facebook. So we're taking that out. I saw someone in the chat say, well, it sounds like RBAC. The difference with RBAC, Dimitri, is that RBAC typically keeps a table of actors or an ACL off to the side and then refers to data. The thing to keep in mind here is that the actual object capability / ACLs are the actual data objects. So if you had a member object that actually contained like Base64 images or a binary image or whatever, an object, a record that stood for that, the record itself is the capability. So you're not separating like, oh, I have a capability over here and let me use it with a record. The record that was sent to you and you being the recipient, like Alice to Bob of that DID, that's the capability. So as a developer, you don't have to think about I'm issuing capabilities and then I'm dealing with data. You're always just dealing with data because the data and the graph is the capability. If that makes sense. Sorry, I know we went a little bit deep there, but. Andor, you want?
Andor, if you're speaking, we cannot hear you at this moment.
Oh, sorry. Thank you.
Yeah.
It's on the other tab. So I'm going to skip over subscriptions. I'm going to just talk about some of the work coming up that we know we have to tackle. Propagation is something that we care about, which is how to get basically a synchronized state factor through a larger network. So there's a few things we're working on, but we've obviously come a long way since last year, and we're hoping that hits the specs pretty soon. Implementations right now, there's mainly one implementation with TDD, but additional implementations would be appreciated. So if anybody wants to try to build their own VWN SDK, I think that would be very helpful for the spec and help inform us as well. So feel free to take the spec and try to implement your own version. We are working on aligning the implementations currently with the aligning the spec with the implementation, and we have an MVP of the spec coming out pretty soon. We're just trying to close out a few final items for the finished version of the MVP of the spec. So I'll pull it off now to Dan. Dan, if you want to take over and show a little bit of that demo, and then we'll follow up with him at the end, talking about some of the stuff we're working on in Diff that's going to include DWNs and part of the process.
All right, I don't know if people can see this. This is still kind of really rough. I've only been working on it really, like, super heads down for a couple weeks, maybe three. But this entire demo that you're going to see, and there might be warts and stuff, so just, you know, please be aware of that, is all just DWN. This is a straight up static web page that is served. There is no quote unquote active application server behind it. We want to make sure almost everything you can do is just, you know, as you would a PWA, right? That can be hosted on GitHub pages. So the end goal is that we're going to release this demo on GitHub pages that you could fork and change the colors and make your own version or tweak the display, but it's all just actually driven off users' DWNs. So there's this sort of ghetto connect that I have that's going to get a lot better. This will create an identity. You can see all the shit that's happening on the right side. It's doing stuff. I'm going to set some images just to make my profile look better. All this stuff is being stored both locally and in a remote DWN at the same time. So you always have this. You can do offline. It's inherently offline. So you don't need to sit there and, you know, wonder if like your data is going to persist. You know, let's do that. You know, put in some,
Like, yeah, so it kind of adds a little social stuff. One little interesting little part here, I'll just put in a bunch of my like past job stuff. I kind of copied LinkedIn effectively. We have all their features now. I'll just put one in to show y'all what it's like. What was it? It was like September 2016. November 21. So yeah, it has like all this good stuff, which is just again all driven by your DWN. So as long as this works, there you go. So you can put in a bunch of things. It'll link it up just like it does with LinkedIn. You know, connect all your contiguous employment, stuff like that. And again, all of this is just DWN records. This image is a record that's defined in the protocol I'm using. This background hero is a record. This is a social record that encompasses your career. I can kind of show what that is like right now. I'll just go in and this protocol is deconstructed a little bit just for expediency's sake. But this is, if people can see this screen, this is the protocol for Follow, which is just a social protocol that we're proposing. Has some objects here, aggregators, follows, story, like people you follow. All these can stand for actors, for instance, could be follows. Thread, reply, media, right? So I've laid out the structure. If you see that there's no actions allowed like this is, it just means that only the user themselves can do it. So the actual owner of the DWN, the DID, can do that. Story, you know, we're going to say obviously there's no actions under story immediately, so only the person who owns the blog can add to it. Media, you know, the author of the story can create, update, and delete media. Comment, anyone can create, update, delete their own comments. Create, update, and delete, by the way, are constrained by default to your own material. So effectively records you author. This is saying that the author of the story, so me, if I authored something and you, if you came and commented, co-delete means that you're allowing people to delete across the streams, like allowing people to delete other people's records. And all of this is eventually strongly consistent. So if you synced one of my blog posts that I put in my DWN, the activities to create comments and represent comments and the deletion of them are all eventually strongly consistent. So everyone gets to see a consistent view of everything that transpires under that blog post, whether it's the update of images and media or anything else. So let me go back to this. There's this concept of stories. I'll write my first story. This is all just live, real time, been added to the DWN. You know, maybe I want a nice image of a pool or some crap like that. As I live type, this unknown image thing is picked up here with DID relative URLs. So if you see this DWeb thing, I can kind of enlarge it real quick. I'm working on right now a service worker that will actually catch what we call DRLs. DWeb links where the DID is the authority portion, and then there's this path that's understood by DWN-centric apps. And it'll actually catch that, transform it into an HTTP-compatible URL by looking up the DID doc, getting the service endpoints, and then replacing the URL path for the authority portion. And so that's actually what's driving this image. There's no code on the page that understands these links. But this is a DRL link that's dropped into an image and caught as a part of a service worker at the network layer. And so what we actually can end up doing is having DID relative links on the web if someone just installs this service worker in their app, which I think is pretty cool. So even an app that's not even built using mostly DWN stuff, maybe it's an app that's totally centralized and just has like a random image that comes from a DRL link. If they have this service worker installed, it'll make those things magically resolve, whether it's link assets or scripts or images, anything on the page that takes a URL that goes and does a remote fetch will now be active and able to be resolved against the DID relative link. Does that make sense? So there's a little view. I'm working on some of this stuff now, but you know, it's coming a long way. I mean, a lot of what you saw was just set up. It took a lot to kind of, you know, get the app going, but single page app, totally static. All the data comes from the local DWN when offline, or if online optimistically tries to go get content from other people's DWNs instead of the cached local content. But we believe that
you know, this is an application substrate. We crafted it in a way where you should be able to build anything on it. The next one I'm going to tackle is Evite. Like, we're just going to replicate Evite, after this sort of medium centric thing. And I'm just going to keep going until we've got a cadre of apps that just cross the gamut of everything, not just social. I mean, a lot of people like to make social protocols that don't work well for other stuff, but we're talking about like private collaborative document editing, like you would have with Google, you know, Docs, everything that should support it. So I don't know, totally willing to take questions. If anyone has any.
Harrison had a question about the difference between, or relationship between DWN and PWA. It's not, the DWN one's actually, the PWA is just sort of this gaming right underneath the app that can allow you to run it, you know, as like an app, but DWNs will, they're essentially that data linking. So there, I don't think PWAs have in scope really the same, sort of data capabilities that a DWN would have. But the reason why I brought up it initially was just that you're running it as a light layer underneath your existing app. So hopefully that answers the question.
Yeah, and I would say that one big thing to remember is that like we see like a PWA is basically, you know, with this DID stuff, we like to call it a DWA. It's just like imbued with the service worker that understands how to translate DID relative URLs into other, you know, actually resolvable URLs. So in that sense, like a PWA is just, or a DWA is just a PWA on steroids, I guess you could kind of think of it as. That makes sense.
And then Ryan has a question on how easy it is to use like CRDT on top of a DWN, and why do applications become eventually consistent?
So the DWN itself kind of is a very rudimentary CRDT. Like it is a last right wins effectively DI. So there, I just added another little guy, but it's effectively a last right wins CRDT at the very base. So like if you have a file that's a newer version of a file that's appropriately signed, follows the protocol rules for whatever protocol it lives under, it's going to win. And all the, when it circulates amongst your DWNs, it's, you know, it's going to be the one that is the latest known record. You can add other CRDT functionality. So for instance, there is, if I go back here to this protocol definition, if you wanted to craft, and I'll just quickly create like an alternative structure to show you. So let's say that I have a different type of app and I create this structure and my app is going to be a docs app. So I'm going to have a logical doc and these can have instances. So it means when I say doc here, it's like there can be instances of doc, right? It's almost like a class. In here, I could have commit, right? I could have this thing called commit. Out on the outside, I could say every doc has participants, And I go in here and I say role true. So now I've just made the participants records a role record, meaning, yeah, I can store data about a participant in a role record, but it actually is when it's assigned by as a recipient to Bob, for instance, he becomes a participant. So I can come in here and say actions, let's say role participant. Oh, it should be doc, sorry. Doc participant. Docs participant. And then I can say delete. Okay, cool. So let's say I do this, right? I have my, and obviously I'd need these same objects declared up here, but I have docs that can have participant roles and they can have commits against them. So someone creates the doc, right? And Alice does. She has a participant role record. She sends the Bob's DWN because maybe they're friends. You can even have like global records like friends. And you know, because she's a friend, she gets to drop the doc in Bob's thing. And now Bob and her have this first understanding that there's a doc that they share together. They can start crafting commit records. Now, though, the payloads of those commit records could be Delta CRDT stuff. Like it could be auto merge payloads. It could be merge patch payloads, whatever you decide, right? You might want to say, let's say that this was commit right here, and I want my data format to be application JSON patch. I think it's plus patch, right? So what I'm declaring is that all of the payloads of commits are JSON patches. So what happens is as Alice and Bob are adding these in sort of a commit stack, like a little bucket, they're going to pull them down and stream them and then be assembling the changes to the document that they're both co-editing, which is going to give you the output of the total document. There's a little action under here called squash that we're working on to help this out, where you can put a commit in that rolls up all the other commits, like basically saying delete all data that's older than me. I've got like the smashed together done thing so far. Right. And obviously that's powerful. So, you know, you wouldn't want to be doing these squashes all the time, but you know, whenever there's a lull in traffic, you might compress it. And that effectively gives you the ability right here to do a docs app, that any sort of CRDT you want under your commit. It's mostly the payload that drives it. And then the clients who are taking those payloads and assembling them in accordance with the particular CRDT you chose to employ. Does that make sense?
All right, so if there's no other questions, I do want to make sure Tim has some sections in the, that will take at least 10 minutes to run through. But if there's any further questions on this, maybe we can bring it up at the end. Would that be okay?
Sure. Okay, yeah, let me just cut the call, cut off the feed here. And cool.
Tim?
Oh, great. So I will share my slides. 1 second. Okay, so first of all, thank you for having us. I used to be a co-chair of the WPC and very excited to exploring with the chairs about how we can continue to work together. So we wanted to roll out and preview some of our plans. Just as context, I think IAW of this year is probably good grounding for what we're trying to do. So I think we saw a lot of signs of success for decentralized identity standards and protocols. A lot of the sessions were really sort of heads down focus on, a specific technical stack and achieving interoperability. And that's great because that really shows signs of adoption, including from regulatory sources. But it's also a really good time to check in and figure out, so what were the original goals of decentralized identity or self-sovereign identity? What are we trying to accomplish here? And it's much broader than the sort of, individual interoperability specifications that we're working at. It's privacy, the ability to own, control your data, portability, avoiding deplatforming. And I think Daniel's demonstration shows really compelling example of how if you're controlling your data, then you get to reuse it across this variety of applications, which currently are siloed. This is a much broader problem than just, the sort of kind of low-level standards that we're focusing on of late, which, again, is great sign of success, but a good time to pop up and think about the bigger goals. So this is part of a broader effort that we're doing, which is spinning up a DIP incubation lab. And the idea is to host code and other artifacts that can spin up apps like in the demo that you saw. I'm going to speed through this because I want to leave time for questions and answers, most importantly. But some context on the DIP life cycle. So historically, what we've been doing is step one and two, which is incubate and develop specifications. And, really focus on that incubation part and getting them matured. And they live in, I went to a show some examples. So BBS Plus, DidCon, DWN, Presentation Exchange. And then specs can either live in DIF or they can move on to other organizations. So W3C, OpenID Foundation, and IETF and included are some examples that have moved along. We do want to complete this cycle by focusing on step three. And that's really where this incubation labs fits in. And that's where we want to allow people to figure out these things. So, you know, independent of the sort of low level discussions of specifications, how do you fit it all together? What can you achieve with it? What does it really mean to achieve interoperability and you know, through a broader ecosystem lens? And so what this group is focusing on is, you know, it serves as an incubation environment for decentralized identity-based user applications and specs. It does provide an IP-safe environment so that, for example, if it's an incubated spec, it can mature appropriately. And for this group, we're really interested in attracting people who are building products and interested in real applications of decentralized identity, and building we mean in the most expansive sense. You don't have to be producing code. Because there are examples of some work items that will be coming through the group that are producing documentation, like ecosystem landscape surveys, recommendations. But of course, you can incubate specifications, you can develop code. And I think most importantly, and this is one reason that we're really keen for feedback from this community, is we're not intending to restrict it to decentralized identity specifications. So we want to be very practical and realistic that these standards live in a broad range of organizations, and where people are really struggling is figuring out how they all fit together. So you can sort of think of this as a live executing sort of instantiation of what we do with div profiles, which are specifications that give a sort of description and reference to other specs to achieve interoperability. I want to skip over this part just to leave time for Q&A, but some of the initial work items proposed is this one, ZKDNS, coming out of the DIF hackathon. That's going to be a code and some draft specification efforts. The interoperability, so the group that currently lives is the interoperability open group. They're interested to make this the work items move faster and move those into the labs as a work item within labs, working on updating the ecosystem mapping report for analysis, best practices, and what you just saw. So actually, we did the demo. At this point, I'm going to stop sharing any questions about any of this. And again, thank you for having us.
Thanks, Kim. Any questions? I have a lot of questions, but I just want to make sure that other people can ask their questions first. So please feel free to just type in Q+. Susan, please.
Hi,
sorry, Susan. We cannot hear your sound very well. Can you try it again?
Yes, I was curious if, and maybe I missed this, about how to engage with the incubator. What's the best, like, contact method for folks that may have a good fit for what you're looking for?
Yeah, just reach out to me. I will include my contact information in the chat right now so you have it. And, yeah, just reach out to me. So it would be through DIF, and so I'll connect you with all the information you need.
Any other question? By the way, there was a question in regards to kind of the different comparisons. I know there's a document in regards to the comparison guide, but can someone actually summarize it a little bit? How does the DWN approach kind of differ from like Solid and other, you know, like encrypted data vault, you know, those kind of approaches?
Yeah. So, yeah, I can run the gambit a little bit on some of the popular ones, right? So Solid is, you know, similar aims, right? Very similar, probably the most similar in terms of overlapping aims. I would say it's quite a bit more centralized, uses WebID instead of DIDs. I think they were talking about adding DIDs, may have even, but, you know, focused on WebID, that was a big thing for Tim for like, Jesus, like almost like 2 decades. And so a lot of the authorization model is much more trusting. It's not an eventually strongly consistent system like that. It's not a distributed and decentralized system. So it's much more about provider host-centric, host-centric view, I suppose, you know, effectively. Whereas DWNs are very, very uncaring about their host to the extent where they're adversarial. They're very adversarial to each other. So two DWNs, like if you hosted a DWN instance at Microsoft and the one at Google and the one at your house, none of them trust each other in the sense that it's sort of like a blockchain. I mean, it's not a blockchain, but it's sort of like it in the sense that it has this rule set and it must prove through the signing and capabilities that it holds when it transfers them in an eventually strongly consistent way that they should be at that state. Not because, you know, you get a message from a particular host or domain that says, oh, it's from me, you trust me, right? And then you do something that doesn't require actual validation. DWNs also don't require client server. I mean, technically it's a transport agnostic, so you can send these record payloads over anything. We actually modeled them through gRPC off the bat, because technically there's gRPC modules for Bluetooth and other stuff. So it's inherently able to be sent over all these mediums. When I would compare it to something like Nostr, for instance, which is, you know, kind of a little bit, has a little bit of limelight. Nostr is still very small in comparison to say something like ActivityPub and Mastodon, you know, roughly 1/50th the size. But it is getting a little bit of play on social media. Nostr is not a data store. So if I had to contrast the two, Nostr is a lot like signing your RSS feed. And in fact, I always kind of joke that, you know, Aaron Schwartz actually accidentally invented Nostr. In 2005, he just forgot to sign his RSS feed. So Nostr is like if you just piled everyone's RSS up in the cloud in a way that just became like a massive fire hose. It doesn't have any state guarantees. It isn't in any way trying to give you accurate information or non, you know, the lack of gaps, things like that. I would look at DWNs as much more of a decentralized version of Firebase, of what Google has with Firebase, than I would if I had to contrast it with RSS, right? So it just tries to do a lot more, and it has obviously taken us like 50 times longer than most of these projects. So that's, you know, maybe to their credit that, you know, we might just fail because we're on a runway. But it does, it's far more ambitious, I suppose, is how.
Real quick, just wanted to point out on that comparison guide, because we have heard a lot of people kind of asking about, you know, again, the tech comparisons. We do talk about, you know, Carrie did Comnoster, ones that are technologies that are not personal data stores, technologies, decentralized storages that are not intrinsically personal data stores, and then the actual personal data stores. So by the way, as I mentioned earlier, we put this together mostly and we did have some input from the community, but if anybody just thinks that there's something that's either inaccurate or needs to be sort of revisited, feel free to write an issue for us or contribute a PR would be great. And we're updating them as we get PRs and so forth and contributions. So just wanted to make sure people knew that there was also things like IPFS and Nostr on this comparison guide as well.
Does that make sense in terms of the comparisons you heard? Like, does it kind of, do you understand what it is versus other approaches?
Yes, thank you for the overview. Yeah. All right, I think we are at time. Any last questions? I think we had a little technical difficulty where a lot of people got kicked out. Sorry about that. Any other last questions? All right, well, thank you. Thank you, Andor. Thank you, Daniel. Thank you, Kim, for jumping on and hosting this great session. And this is like one of my most anticipated sessions, and thank you for answering a lot of questions for us. Thanks a lot.